the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 51 for the week of November 17th, 2014. I am a submarine with screen doors, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Ishtar Sarah D. Bunting.
We'll fix it in post.
Perpetual also ran Tara Ariano.
This year for sure.
Nobody else.
Welcome, everybody. Our month of banking podcasts continues, this time with a special. All user submissions, all proposed no-knacks. If you are not familiar with the concept, the no-knack is the opposite of the canon. It's an episode that we are going to decide whether it's the worst episode of an otherwise good show. We have three very exciting submissions from you, our users. So let's get started with A Dawson's Creek.
Hi. So first, I want to apologize for making anyone have to watch what I personally consider to be not only the worst episode of this show, but the worst episode of any show ever. I'm, of course, talking about Dawson's Creek, Season 5, Episode 15, Downtown Crossing, or the one where Joey gets mugged. This was billed as the second part of a two-part episode, but I could never figure out why. Sure, the prior episode ends with Joey throwing a snowball at a sign, and that's where we pick up, but there wasn't a cliffhanger or anything, unless we count the will she or won't she question about Joey going to Mac on her professor. Spoiler alert, yes, yes she will. Because the first terrible thing about this episode is that Joey is the only regular cast member in it, partnered with the world's most charming mugger, Sam Ball. So, already, this is a waste of an episode if you actually wanted to see the plot furthered on the show. We open on Joey and the snowball and the agreeing to go to Gross Professor's house, but oh no. Just after she's withdrawn a 20 from the ATM, she's approached by Mr. Ball. Before he out and out mugs her, they have some witty and mildly threatening banter back and forth.
Hey.
Hey.
I didn't mean to scare you or anything.
Well, you did, so.
So where are you heading?
Home.
Where's home?
None of your business.
Ooh, snotty. I like K. I'm not gonna mug you or anything, if that's what you're worried about.
Good to know.
And I'm not about to force myself on you. I can get my own dates. Thank you very much. You don't look so relieved. As far as potential rapists go...
I don't mean to be rude, but...
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, who is this guy? Why is he violating my envelope of space? Well, truth is... I was wondering if you had any money that I could borrow.
No.
No? You're not even going to think about it?
I thought about it, and I said no.
See, this is the problem with the world. When you put yourself out there, you make yourself vulnerable, they just shoot you down without a second thought.
Listen, I'm sorry. I don't have any money, okay? And seriously, you're scaring me, and I just want to get home.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm sorry for the hassle. Let me walk you home.
No.
That's understandable, but, you know, you should be careful, sweetheart. I mean, it's late. Next guy you come across, he might not be as nice as me.
She's a moron and doesn't act on her gift of fear, and so, to the surprise of absolutely no one, he tries to mug her. I say tries because for a good few minutes, she just snarks back and forth with him about it. And this is after he's showed her that he's armed.
Come on. Just give me what you got. I assure you this will all end reasonably well.
Look, I don't have anything to give you.
First of all, hon, you just walked out of an ATM. Secondly, a rich little college girl like you. Where do you go? Harvard? Or Wellesley?
Worthington.
See, that's very nice.
Doesn't make me any less broke at the moment.
Well, you're getting scared? You know, don't be scared.
It's easy for you to say you're holding the gun.
Okay, be scared. But just so you know, I really don't have any intention of using it.
Write this from the guy who 5 minutes ago said he had no intention of mugging me.
Just trying to put you at ease.
Maybe you should have thought twice about, I don't know, mugging me.
Well, what's done is done. Water under the bridge and whatnot. I think we're going to have to get past it. I mean, if we're going to have a successful mugger-muggy relationship here. Don't you?
Is there any chance that gun may accidentally go off in your pants? Because that would be really great.
You know what? You, young lady, are a wise ass. You know that? And I may just have to shoot you yet.
After a terrible rape threat, some awful discussion of how everyone loves boys' names for girls, and various other pleasantries no one in the world would ever exchange with someone who is committing a violent crime against them, he forces her back to the ATM and makes her empty both her checking and savings accounts. He steals her coat, and after some more awful, witty banter, he allows her to leave. Then he gets hit by a car. Dum-Dum Joey goes over to him, takes back her coat, cash, and phone, and then realizes he's not dead. So they have some more god-awful banter while she calls and then waits for an ambulance.
Can I ask you a question?
Does it look like I'm going anywhere?
You're a drug dealer, fairly lucrative profession, right? So why do you go around terrorizing college girls in the middle of the night?
Well,
Joey,
the industry in which I toil, it goes through periodic dry spells. This just happens to be one of them. Plus, I have a very high maintenance wench of a wife.
How does the little lady feel about your line of work?
She's not a big fan, actually. In fact, she finally kicked my ass out last month. I'm trying to worm my way back into her heart ever since.
Do you want me to call her?
No.
Well, I'm sure she'd probably like to know about this.
Yeah, well, I don't want her to know. Okay.
And then, blah, 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 fish cakes, Joey's at the hospital, where she's met his wife and daughter, and of course lectured the wife about how she should be nicer to her drug-dealing mugger of a husband for the daughter's sake.
I think I owe you an apology, Joey. I think the scumbag who mugged you was probably my husband. Well, if it makes you feel any better, he was nice about it. Great. Maybe they can put that on his headstone. He was nice about it. He screwed up his daughter's life, but he was really nice about it. I think I'm about done here.
You're not gonna stay?
No. Why the hell would I?
To see how he is?
I don't care anymore. Whether he lives or dies, what difference does it make to me at this point?
For her sake.
Trust me, she is better off without him. Look, I'm sorry about everything. I wish there was something I could say or do to take away what happened to you tonight, but I can't. So please, let's just move on, okay?
Look, I'm sorry. I know this is none of my business, but for some reason I somehow feel like it is, and so I'm just gonna say it. I've been that little girl. She doesn't know her dad's a loser. She thinks he's pretty much the greatest thing in the entire world. So if things don't go exactly his way tonight, wouldn't you like to give her the chance
to what?
To say goodbye.
You're right about one thing, Joey. This is none of your business.
Because of course Joey is the daughter. See, guys, there's a moral here, or something. After some more drama, Joey somehow ends up being alone with Mr. Ball while he's dying. She gets some much-needed, though ultimately irrelevant, closure regarding her own drug-dealing father.
You want to know why I need that money so bad? A couple of weeks ago, Gracie let me walk Sammy to school. Why the hell she did, I have no idea. Must have been a moment of weakness. She gave me $500 to pay for her daycare. What do? Drop my daughter off at school and spend the money on dope.
Heartwarming story. What's your point?
Well, the point is, I love my wife. I love my daughter. But I am who I am. Nothing's gonna change that. I mean, you wanna know why people do the things that they do? Or... there is no why, sweetheart. They just do.
That's crap. If you really loved your daughter, if you really loved her, you wouldn't do those things.
No, you're wrong. I do love my daughter. I love her very much. I love her so much it's easier just being stoned. I mean, it's not like I can overcome every tragic flaw I have. It's just not possible, you know?
So let me ask you a question. She comes to you in 15 years and asks you why you couldn't get over yourself for her, and what do you say?
Grow up. Get on with your life. Don't blame me.
And then, I shit you not, she and the mugger sing Close to You in two-part harmony as he dies. Seriously, this was an actual episode of television. I feel like I don't even need to make a case for why it belongs in the Nonak. You've all just watched it. It is terrible.
I'll start. When Dave said we had a Nonak submission for Dawson's Creek, I said, is it Downtown Clark Crossing? And I was right, of course, because this is definitely generally agreed upon through culture to be the worst episode of Dawson's Creek. And it really is. What she doesn't really emphasize in her submission is he threatens to rape her like four times in the preamble to him mugging her. And yet she still is hanging around and like being cute and trying to tell his estranged wife how to behave with him and stuff. I'm like, this is not how any real person would act in this situation, I don't think. But when I was discussing it with Sarah earlier this week, she made a very good point about its Nonak worthiness. And Sarah, here's where I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, here's the problem, and I'm always the one who is sort of getting meta about canon submissions and saying, you know, are we talking about whether this is like great qua great, or if this is a representative episode? And the Nonak version of that is like, is this bad? Yes. This is like an insult to television, mm-hmm. Eyeballs, sandball, you name it.
The city of Boston.
Yeah, which is apparently completely devoid of people.
It was the most...
once the sun goes down.
Yeah. For a downtown crossing, it's remarkably deserted.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it was even supposed to be that late. I don't remember because I had actually quit the show by this point.
Me too.
I don't think I had actually ever seen this one all the way through. I did nurse our esteemed colleague Jessica Morgan back to mental health after having to recap it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised she still talks to us. Anyway, my larger point is this really that much worse than the rest of the show?
Right.
This is an egregiously terrible episode of TV, but mostly it's boring. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so unrealistic 2.5 minutes in.
Yeah.
Like, she's not checking over her shoulder. She's just, like, on the phone in the ATM. Like, this is supposed to be a fairly worldly person, mm-hmm. Joey. I mean, obviously she's not because she was in love with Dawson for a long time. But
right.
Anyway, I just don't, like, I didn't buy any of it. So it was difficult to get too exercised about any of it. And then, like, the estranged wife shows up and I'm like, hey, it's Harmony from Buffy. And I did feel, like, pretty bad for everyone involved, but having recapped most of that show, I just, like, it's definitely bad, mm-hmm. but I just don't know if it's like so much worse than the rest of the show's run, where
yeah.
you know the good episodes of that show, like ones that didn't make you want to throw anything, you can count on one hand.
Yeah.
You don't need your thumb either.
No, and that's the thing, like, if both of us had bailed at this point, is it really, as we say in our, you know, our description of what the Nonak is it an otherwise good show? And the question is, I mean, for me, it is, it's not. But what do you think, Dave?
Well, somebody asked that very question when I called for submission, said, well, you know, the only thing we're not talking about is a show that is, you know, so universally, you know, terrible that nobody really even ever speaks of it anymore.
Right.
So, you know, don't get too caught up in the, you know, is this a show of distinction?
Right.
And then I need to find the worst show in this masterpiece theater worthy
right.
TV show. I mean, this qualifies as something that is Nonakable. So I think that's...
I mean, it was part of the culture at the time, and it is still a show that's beloved of many people.
Yeah. I mean, just because it's loved because it was so, you know, bad in all its ways doesn't mm-hmm. mean that there can't be a, you know, terrible episode that's above and beyond the rest of the terrible episodes.
I mean, you know, is Beverly Hills 90210 a good show?
No,
but I still love it, and we have inducted episodes of that into the canon as well. Yeah. So yeah,
but and that does raise an interesting question for our next All Nonaks episode, which is the whatever the Christmas episode is with the angels talking about
yes.
them and saving them from the bus crash.
Yes.
Because that's so terrible that I can't watch
it. What about the one where they're all from the 60s?
That one's really bad,
also
too.
Also terrible.
Mm-hmm. What? Yeah. And the bottle episode at the cabin when Brandon falls off a cliff and yet his hair doesn't move. But we're getting off track.
But are we, though? Really? And here's another thing, though, now that I think about it. Like, Dave makes good points or clarifies my questions, at least. But can you really have a worst episode of Dawson's ever in which Dawson himself is not present since he was usually the biggest problem?
Interesting. That's an interesting question. Dave, what did you think of the episode?
Well, you guys are the experts when it comes to Dawson's Creek. I mean, that's okay. This site wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that show, as everything started with a site called Dawson's Rap, which grew into TWAP, which, you know, and all that. So, speaking as a Dawson's Creek outsider, I mean, this episode was just written so poorly. It's like somebody started to write a meet cute episode
yep.
and then decided, you know, at the end of it to sort of retrofit it to be this mugging story and forgot to like put all the meet cutesy dialogue out of it, where she's just kind of, you know, just seems like she's, people are flirting with, you know, rapists.
Yeah, she. It's like Katie Holmes doesn't know how to act it, but at the same time, I feel like this is the thing where she went to the writer's room and was like, I really need a showcase. This is my year for the Emmys, you know?
It did, yeah, or rather that, you know, this was the year that they blew their budget on something, so they had to do these episodes where a whole bunch of the cast members didn't get paid and that, you know, bounced the books for that season, which happens a lot.
Sure.
See, also, as a season, you know, as a show gets longer into tooth, suddenly, you know, regular characters start to fall off the page, and that's another reason why that's all usually cost, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is also why Parenthood seasons keep getting shorter, is because their opening credits cast is like 24 deep or something.
But watching this episode just, you know, as some dude who had to watch this because it was in the no-neck.
so did we, for the record.
You know, I know, but, you know, I've the number of Dawson's Creek episodes I actually watch, I can probably count on my hands, you know, even though there was like 17,000 seasons of it. This was, like, really terrible. Like, not only were everybody's motivations way out there, everybody's reactions totally wrong, the downtown Boston that seemed to be more deserted than any episode of The Walking Dead seemed to be really wrong. You know, how about just yelling?
Yeah.
You know, if you think, you know, try that.
And then she kicks him, but like this very sort of Twyla kick.
Yeah.
And then he's like, that was not cool. And I'm like, that was the only cool thing that happened, except for the part where she didn't make sure that you were knocked the fuck out.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And
to the yelling point too, and in various other shots, when they change the angle, we can see there's a pizza place on the corner too, which presumably is open. So, anyway.
And then after the street scene, you know, he gets hit by the car and then is taken to the hospital, and she's, you know, also taken to the hospital to check her out. Nobody seems to know that they're connected. You know, everybody who could figure out that out is not on set anymore. So there's a lot of interaction with other people from the muggers' life who comes in, and, you know, there's this slow burning scene where obviously the, you know, the climax of it is going to be, oh my God, you were run over by my husband. It's like, and it just sort of lasts so long that you're wondering, am I super smart, or do the writers think everybody is incredibly dumb?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a really, really poorly written episode. It's a poorly, like, the very concept just shouldn't have made it beyond, you know, somebody's head. You know, it never should have got on paper. Never should have been committed to Pixel.
Agree.
And the little button on it at the end where she has to lie to the dead father's tiny little, this is air quotes, cute little girl.
Yeah, no.
Who looks like one of those, I know it's bad to like slam a kid, she can't help it, but I'm going to anyways. She kind of looks like the kid version of those, don't you want to be just like us, Twilight Zone episode, pig people.
That's... That's a little harsh.
I said the kid version.
But I see where you got
that
there.
The young of the species are generally cuter than the adults. She's a cuter little pig.
To me, she looked more like she has like a Who face, like from Dr. Seuss.
All right, well,
she had
whatever.
A really long upper lip.
Not cute.
Anyway.
Anyways, she lies at the end. It's like, oh, no, your dad saved me from
He pushed me out of the way of the car.
And it was just like,
she puts the money that she stole back from him into Harmony's pocket.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. At no point in this was anybody doing the right thing.
No.
Wear a hat. It's winter. And cover your split ends. Yeah. Okay, I'm done.
So was it a terrible episode? Sure. How does it stack up against other Dawson's Creek episodes? I mean, I don't know. I do think it would be interesting if the worst episode of Dawson's Creek did not contain Dawson, because I think then that gives Dawson an out, which I think James Vanderbeek would be very happy about.
And to be fair, he seems to have turned into kind of a cool guy later in life. So
he really has. He really did bring it back online.
He turned it around.
Yeah.
Legitimately.
So, like, this is an episode to avoid. And I can see why anybody who was watching the series would hate this, because, you know, it is this sort of an aside story and a very poor one at that. You know, it's just her. Mm-hmm. And she's not the strongest character in the world.
No, but they sure thought she was when that show was on.
Yeah. So terrible episode, but I'm interested to see how you think it stacks up against other terrible episodes, which you would be more inclined to know about.
All right. So are we voting?
Well, I'm asking, are there more terrible episodes, and is this more terrible than those other terrible episodes?
Oh, I mean, it's hard for me to, it was so long ago, and it's not a show that I ever, like, rewatched, you know? I didn't go back and revisit it after I wrote about it.
But what about the ones that made you really mad? Ones where they, you know, they were telegraphing, you know, this pairing, but they went with
Dave,
that pairing.
I'm so old that, like, I really don't remember the show. Like, yeah. I really, it's...
I do. This didn't make me nearly as angry as a lot of the stuff.
Interesting.
Like a lot of the just character assassinations, stupidity, insisting on putting yet another TV rave in front of my eyeballs. This is like a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could also be that I tend to watch stuff now slightly more like anthropologically, and I don't get as pissed about it.
Right.
Like, I was, whatever, leafing through a Lucky magazine and doing my nails. Like, this 43 minutes was not a total loss, but...
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad, and for people to get really angry and find it offensive, sure.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to say let's vote, and we'll go to Tara.
Well, on behalf of all the people that did stick with the show and did love it and probably in their rewatches skip over this one, and also on behalf of, like, old Joey, who in the early, early going was kind of cool and at this point is just a complete feeb. speaking of character assassination, I'm going to vote yes, it is no knackable.
All right. And Sarah, what do you say on the no knack worthiness of this?
The use of the term feeb does sort of sway me slightly towards voting yes.
What if I added
and
simp?
I think, yes, simp. Also a good one. Stunad.
Maroon.
And with the baby voice, oofa. This is a terrible episode. I think it's a solid submission. Respect for the submission. And no disrespect to people who survived the entire show and this episode and really do feel that it's no-knacky. But no Dawson is no-knack for me. I'm voting no.
Fair enough.
And no-knack is supposed to be the worst episode of the series. You know, once we say that something is a no-knack, unless it's an ongoing series, that's it. The books are closed. So you got to keep that in mind when you're voting. And since I haven't seen the whole series and Tara never really gave me an answer, I got to go with Sarah on this one and say, there's going to be a worse episode than this. It probably has Dawson, and she would know. It put her kid through college. All right.
Downtown Crossing, not Downton Crossing.
Yeah, Downtown Crossing. You are not in the no-knack for... You are not the no-knack for Dawson's Creek.
So that means the door is open for other submissions of even worser episodes of Dawson's Creek. So bring them on.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, shit. What did I do?
Coming up next, it is Project Runway.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. My name is Dylan Garcia from Austin, Texas, and I am submitting Season 9, Episode 3 of Project Runway, titled Go Big or Go Home, for consideration into the NoNak. This episode belongs to the NoNak because of its vague, gimmicky challenge, its boring conflict, and its disgusting clothing. The episode begins with Heidi walking down the runway on a pair of stilts, followed by more models also on stilts. At least two designers who are adults are visibly frightened by the stilt walkers. Heidi tells the designers they will be designing an outfit for the stilt walkers in teams of two, which is a classic sign of a weak episode.
There's a reason that I am this tall right now. For your next challenge, we want you to think big, really big. Meet your models for your next challenge.
Hi, ladies.
For your next runway show, we want you to think outside of the box. We want you to create a look that is eye-catching, imaginative, and truly larger than life. You will be divided into teams of two, and each team will have a stilt walker as your model.
After a drawing from the button bag determines the teams, Heidi announces the runway will take place in public for the first time in Project Runway history, even though there have been plenty of episodes when they were in public, but whatever. The designers are told they have one day for a challenge, another sign of a shitty episode, and their models come in for a consultation. Victor describes his idea for a dress as Victorian, which Burke quickly and condescendingly corrects as Elizabethan.
Kind of like Queen Victoria a little bit, like just
a little bit
big here, nice big, like open here, but maybe a big collar, but it's sexy here.
Uh-huh.
Queen Victoria was in mourning for 50 years. I don't think that's a sexy direction I would like to go into.
If you do a dress that like a bustle like here, her boobs are gonna be shown like
that's
nicely.
That's not Victorian, tasteful. That's Elizabethan.
Or whatever.
Well, there's a difference.
Bert is a know-it-all. He's just very obnoxious.
Victor really needs to do a little bit of book reading.
I mean, you colored it, not me.
But if you don't put it underneath the whole dress and the jacket, then it's gonna be messy.
What do you mean messy?
I thought the shape was supposed to be kind of roundish. Why don't you finish this, since the whole idea?
No, I don't have the whole idea. This is a design that we're working on together.
No, I know, I'm saying you need to hold on. You need to hold on.
Let me finish.
I'll be back.
Okay, you're going back.
I can't deal with you. It's like you act like a small kid, like you don't let me
talk. No, because you're getting confused.
No, it's not a question.
You're getting confused.
It's not a question, it was a comment.
Okay, well, I'm making a
statement.
Save
it for the judge. He's, like, so immature. He's, like, a 57-year-old kid.
Selena's worried about teammate Bryce using black fabric because she doesn't want to make a gothic ballerina, because that would be ridiculous. Julie is so excited about her matador design that she playfully pokes her teammate Josh, who angrily and confusingly calls her a poker and a puncher. Tim makes the rounds, and the only team with a remotely interesting dress is Anthony, Ryan, and Laura's, which is a red dress with a collar that looks suspiciously like the collar Anthony made one episode before. Selena cries. We cut to the next day, and the designers get ready for the public runway. The public runway takes place in Battery Park, and a huge crowd is gathered. Feline cries again. Heidi introduces the judge, which includes guest judge and stilt walker expert Kim Kardashian. All of the outfits are hideous, including Josh and Julie's eye-searing matador outfit, Victor and Bert's couch fabric dress, Feline and Bryce's non-dress, and Cecilia and Danielle's pumpkin-haired 50s housewife dress. At the judging, Anthony, Ryan, and Laura, Kimberly and Becky, and Cecilia and Daniel are on the top, while Julie and Josh, Bert and Victor, and Bryce and Feline are the bottom. Laura is named the winner and receives immunity. Bert and Victor are criticized for their dresses and their poor teamwork. While defending his reasoning for not sketching, Victor hilariously screams, "He took my HP computer." Strangely, the only outfit outright laughed at is Julie and Josh's matador thing, though all of them were hilariously ugly. Felina sits at home for not making anything but a headpiece and isn't even given the dignity of the typical drum sound. You know the one.
But literally, you gave her a black swan.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
This has no effort put into it. It does look like just a tank top that I wear to bed, and it looks like a tie wrapped around the waist a couple times. This just looks like you could have done this in 15 minutes.
You know, I think the idea had so much promise. However, there's nothing, there's no detail. It's just the beginning of something.
It's like you said, it's like half done.
Well, it's like none done.
Yeah.
I love her headpiece. I think the headpiece is great.
Well, I'm so glad I made something.
I think the headpiece is great. Listen, to me, it's like she's got every dance reference and it ends up just looking like nothing because they don't meld.
If there could be any redeeming qualities said about this episode, I guess it'll be rage-inducing eventual winner Anya is barely seen. Also, if you do some snooping online, Josh Z and Raphael's decoy outfit can be found, which is so bad it's kind of hilarious. Their outfit was clearly edited out, which explains the strange green screen effect at the end of the runway when all the models walk out together. Whether deciding whether or not this episode belongs to Nonak, I present a question. Is there anything worse than dedicating your whole life to fashion design only to have Kim Kardashian judge your ability to make a costume for a stiltwalker? With that in mind, I humbly believe this episode should be in the Nonak as the worst Project Runway episode of all time. Thanks for the consideration, and thanks for making the best damn TV podcast out there. Aww. Take care.
Sarah, why don't you start us up?
I shall. Thank you so much for the submission, Dylan. Listening to it was much more pleasurable than sitting through this episode. This episode comes from the Anya, Victor Luna, and Josh the Bedazzler season of Project Runway. That's season 9. I don't recall offhand if Michael Kors was still filling the pole position seat full time.
I think he was.
But he is in this episode, and this challenge is terrible, but I'm not sure I can vote for this as a no-nack, and here's why. It's entirely possible that over the last few years I've just gotten accustomed to weird, irrelevant challenges and square peg sponsorships and rainway experiments, and one-day challenges are the norm now. I totally see what he's saying, that, like, stilt walkers, who cares? Kim Kardashian, who cares? But this episode, relatively speaking, was not that bad. Like, I guess if you really hated Bert, it's, like, sort of upsetting because he's sort of jerky to Victor Luna, but you should really know the difference between Elizabethan and Victorian. It's, like,
if
not...
If you're a fashion designer or
it's
anyone.
It's not a fine line. They're not, like, even neighboring eras. I don't...
No, and when Bert says, like, Queen Victoria was in mourning for 50 years, that's not the look I'm going for. Like, that's a good line, and he's right.
Yeah, he is. I mean, the central challenge is definitely out of left field and has absolutely no real-world applications or relationship to fashion as a field of study, but the episode was pretty entertaining on a problem-solving level, and the judges actually were not the caricatured versions of themselves. Like, I thought, given the... like ridiculousness happening, they were fairly measured, and even Kim Kardashian had a few good notes. The winner and the loser are not an outrage, which in this particular season is kind of an achievement because you got colorblind people and people who just pin stuff. And I mean, I don't know, like this compared to what comes after it, like I think this episode is fairly middle of the road, or sort of typical of what we may have Stockholm syndromed ourselves into thinking is normal for the show. Mm-hmm. But if this is not an episode in which Gretchen wins, hard pressed to say that it's the worst. What did you guys think?
Well, first of all, in keeping with our fail theme in the episode, non-shout out to the Lifetime Apple TV app, because we tried to watch it on it, and instead of being the episode that it claimed to be when we hit play, it was Dance Moms. And then when we tried another episode in this season, it was like some TV movie. So good job, Lifetime. The ones from the scenes didn't seem to be up to date, but still, it's very weird. Anyway, I wasn't really sure why this was picked either. I mean, Dylan is hilarious. I'm almost swayed, but like it doesn't stand out to me as being especially egregious. I mean, the weirdest thing about it is that they say that what's-her-face with the gothic ballerina girl, Feline, that mm-hmm. They say the only thing they like about her outfit is the headpiece, and that's the only thing she made. And then she gets sent home, so I don't get it. But
and this is one of those times that actually later seasons extended judging mm-hmm. would have been helpful, because I think the problem was that she couldn't pattern match, right. Like she couldn't seam match. Right. And I am assuming the judges knew that or were told that. And
right.
We're like, we can keep her, but she's just going to go home next week because she doesn't know what she's doing.
Right. I mean, and also, just as a sidebar, it also makes you wonder if the whole thing where they bring out the winning and losing looks and, like, get right up in them and inspect them really closely was a direct reaction to all the outrage after Anya won.
Right.
I mean, I think, I feel like it came about a couple of seasons later, but still.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't, you know. This just feels like, I mean, maybe at the time it felt more wrong, But as you say, like, all of the stuff that's dumb about this episode has continued to be dumb in future episodes. And the fact, I mean, the only thing that I can think that would really distinguish it is that it's the first episode of this season where they actually got to go buy fabric, because the first two were unconventional materials challenges or something else.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I didn't not enjoy watching it, so.
Yeah, no, I had a fine time revisiting it, usually with stuff like this, like, unless it's really early seasons, mm-hmm. like Wendy Pepper era or around there. Mm-hmm. It's not like... It's not a worthwhile rewatch, but this was interesting to see these people again. And it was like, oh yeah, Bert.
Right.
I enjoyed that guy.
Dave, you love shirts and stilts.
Sure do. Well, the answer to the who would care about doing fashions on stilts, the puppeteers from the Dark Crystal, obviously, comes to mind.
True. That's true.
I wish I could recall what those creatures are called, but I can't.
Skeksis.
No, not those guys.
Oh.
There's basically like the horses of the universe are like these guys that stride. Maybe they're called like striders or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So those guys. Shout out to those guys.
I sort of wish that someone would have made like an AT-AT walker type box. Mm-hmm. Just had someone like driving it with a gear shift.
You might as well. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Like, as you said, Sarah, like, it's none of this is about fashion that regular people are supposed to wear in regular life.
I gotta tell you why I don't think this is the no-knack, because nothing in this episode seemed quite as stupid as the Red Robin challenge they did.
yeah, I was gonna mention that. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. Here's a show that is like so long in the tooth and so afraid of I would imagine doing the same thing, or at least looking like they're doing the same thing week after week, which I don't think would necessarily be a bad thing for the type of show it is. I mean, I don't know what the harm is in doing a nice evening dress or a nice day dress and, you know, and then just mix it up with seasons or, you know, the type of event you're going to, formal versus, you know, casual and all that kind of stuff.
Listen to
or
you.
But the color, you have to use bamboo.
Right.
Yeah.
But
I
the
hear
one,
you.
But the one where it's like, well, what we really are looking for is imagine you're on Jupiter and you've got
right.
a really high gravity situation. So, you know, the dress is really going to be compact. So you got to make sure that you integrate, you know, airy lattice work into your whatever, you know, into the.
Also, it's sponsored by Pure Kentucky Bourbon.
Exactly.
Oh,
so make sure that you integrate, you know, their long history and smooth, sweet flavors into like at some point.
Oh, and also we're sending you to the cloisters to sketch for inspiration. Yeah. So integrate those three things. Okay, bye.
So, you know, the longer the show goes on,
HP computer,
the more ridiculous the challenges seem to get, at least in the aggregate,
it's
you
true.
Know, by season. And, you know, there's obviously sponsor pressure from the network to get certain things, you know, in the show. See Red Robin, probably is the most egregious one that I know of. I bet there's more. But it seems to me that this show is just going to have dumber and dumber episodes as it goes along. And even for an ongoing show, I bet this isn't the dumbest one, just knowing that that Red Robin one exists and that I watched it. And watching this no-knack submission didn't make me nearly as angry as that Red Robin one did.
That was really bad.
It's
not even a fashion brand at all.
But here's the thing.
Even the Red Robin guy is like, what
the fuck
am I doing here?
But what makes the Red Robin one worse is that the stupidest thing about the episode was... out of the participants' hands,
yeah,
right?
You're
it's
right.
Like if the show was dumb because like some guy decided to today's fashion needs pants as hats, you know, and that wow, that was a dumb. It got kicked off, and there's a big argument. All right, whatever. That might be, you know, a worthy moment created by a contestant, but like we started off. You got to create a burger-inspired whatever. I don't remember what the fuck it was.
It was really stupid. It was too stupid to remember.
It was, yeah. And, like, that
there
is the fault of the producers.
There was no tie-in.
Right.
It was like, we have a lot of kinds of burgers. There's a lot of kinds of fashion.
Oh, and while
make
you're
sketching. Kind of fashion.
And yeah. while you're sketching, here's some bottomless fries.
Right.
It was just, like, so forced, so obvious, so out of place. And you know Tim Gunn was mortified that he had to be... wherever they were in Secaucus, New Jersey.
I don't know. I feel
that.
Like his defenses have worn down over the years, and now he's like, whatever.
Yeah. Tim Gunn loves money.
Yeah.
Anyways, so
yep.
I'm not a big Project Runway watcher, but I've seen enough to know that there is at least one episode worse than this one. Therefore, I have to say no.
Yeah, I agree. No.
Sarah?
Yeah, no for me.
All right.
Thank you for the submission. It was hilarious.
That was a really good submission, yes. And I apologize for keeping in the little flubs, but those were endearing.
Yep. Speaking of endearing flubs. Oh, sorry.
Go Big, Go Home. Season 9, Episode 3, not inducted into the canon. Project Runway canon still open for something. All right, here we go. Tara, you wanted to say something?
Speaking of endearing flubs, here's a submission about The Good Wife, and it made me laugh so much when I listened to it this morning.
The episode I'm submitting for the NONAC is The Good Wife and The Law 1, Season 4, Episode 2. The Good Wife is a procedural show with soap opera elements, and the procedural part is the court case, and the soap opera elements are everything that happens outside the court. They often revolve around Alicia being the wife of Peter Florek, a Chicago politician. This particular episode happens in season 4, the weakest season of The Good Wife. This episode fails on three fronts. First, in the case of the week involving a student at a protest, it's just okay, it's not that strong. The quirky judge is James Urbaniak, who's biased in favor of Harvard-related evidence.
Your Honor, Mr. Beecham taking a drug that could alter his brain chemistry is perfectly relevant. In fact, there was a study on Elvitil's side effects at, Harvard Medical School.
Really? Do you have it here?
I do, Your Honor.
It's common that the writers will give the judge a quirk like Anna Gasteyer's In My Opinion judge, who I really actually like. But the judge is just kind of annoying and seems very one-dimensional and stupid. This also has a quirky jury where the jury gets to ask questions of the witnesses. The case plays out as usual with Kalinda finding the evidence during the trial that leads to the settlement. Second, the firm is in financial trouble, and Nathan Lane as Clark Hayden is the accountant overseeing the firm. He is given very little to do in the first season, besides being mysterious in whom he fires. The results of these firings are never explained and set up the character to seem vengeful and incompetent. I actually like this character later, but he'll be better used and better written in later episodes. Third is Kalinda's husband's storyline. She's always been the character with a mysterious past. As often happens, you don't actually want to know what the past is. It's the worst thing about the fourth season and was rumored to be cut short because the audience hated it. When not fighting or having weird sex scenes, they talk like no people ever.
You left me.
Yep.
You left me hanging, my lowest point.
I wish I'd seen your face.
2 years inside, I get out. I expect my loving wife to be there. Instead, you take my money and you burn my clothes.
Did you cry?
In the worst scene of the episode, Kalinda and Nick are at an ice cream parlor in the middle of the day for some reason. He fingers her, then puts his fingers in her ice cream, and in defiance of this, she continues eating the ice cream. And if you listen, they actually punch up the children's voices when the fingering happens. Nick has more scenes, one with Alicia that's filled with menace, as all his scenes are filled with menace. And it's unsettled and boring. Later, there's a nonsensical dialogue and a sex scene because Kalinda has sex. Also, very little Eli as played by Alan Cumming. Overall, The Good Wife is one of the best series on television. Season 5 was great. Season 4 just wasn't up to its writing standards. They eventually righted course towards the end of the season, but it just started off really badly, especially with this Kalinda and her husband plotline. It sucked. So I'm submitting this for the NONAC, as I believe this is mainly because of the Kalinda's husband storyline and his stupid scenes in this stupid episode. I'm submitting this episode for the NONAC.
Thank you. So here's my problem with this NONAC submission in a nutshell. I think this might be a substituting a NONAC submission for a storyline in its whole.
Yeah.
I know everybody hated the husband storyline, and in this episode, it's such a small part of it that it didn't really bother me. And I thought the Harvard judge courtroom scenes were just fine in keeping with, you know, The Good Wife's tradition of the quirky judge and working around it. and all that stuff. So I think, you know, this is not the best episode out there, but I think maybe we're falling into the trap of this is a placeholder for a bigger subject matter, which is certainly in the spirit of the no-knack, but not in the letter of the law. What say you guys?
My notes are, this is the entirety of my notes that I took. Oh, it's a Nickisode, enough said. I also always enjoy James Urbaniak, and that the Harvard judge quirk didn't bother me. The Nathan Lane bit was dumb, but I mean, all the whatever ongoing financial problems with the firm, I complained about for several seasons. I don't actually think season 4 is the weakest. I think season 2 was a little weaker than that. And the Maddie character, like, that just kind of went nowhere. I'm not sure why. I don't love that. I don't love Maura Tierney in the role. I mean, I seldom love Maura Tierney. Sorry, wife. Yeah.
More for me.
But I didn't like her in this role. Like, I didn't like this episode, and I despised that storyline. For all the reasons that he cited, and I am glad that the writers were like, we fucked up. We're getting rid of him. Kalinda was never quite the same for me after it. That ice cream scene is so try-hardy. Like, it's not even that gross. It's just, like, trying so hard to be shocky.
It's pretty gross, sir.
it's pretty gross
for network TV, but, like, yeah, I'll save my comments for my turn.
Yeah, but it's far from the sort of most shocking fingering-related scene, which that one was actually, like, pretty hot and well done and wasn't trying to whatever. Like, oh, it's Kalinda. She's pushing the boundaries of whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, I kind of wanted some soft serve and also to not be watching this episode anymore. I think in the series to date, it's the worst. I mean, I would hear arguments for another episode, but this one is terrible.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but you're 100% right about that scene. It's so dumb. And not only that, but, like, Archie Panjabi seems like she's selling it out. Like, it seems like she hates it. She's not trying. And when he's like, you left me, and she goes, did you cry? Like, no emotion. Like, doesn't even have her full voice behind the lines. Like, she does not care. She hates it. Or so it seems to me, but I,
with good reason.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I thought James Urbaniak was funny. I always like him too. I thought the stuff about the case was interesting to me. I thought the, figuring out which of the jurors was pressing all the stuff was neat, and how she figured it out. And then Will was like, I just need to know how to argue to this one person. And then, you know, tailored his questioning after that to be like, you know, after he survived a major family tragedy, hint, like, you know, I thought that stuff was pretty okay. And, you know, at the time it was extremely timely, you know, and was occupied times. So, as much as I hate Nick, I don't think the rest of the episode was as bad as that. For me. So I'm going to vote no on no-knackiness.
I will also vote no on no-knackiest, but Sarah, it sounds like we have a yes vote.
It's yes knack.
Yes
me.
Knack. Well, look at this. All
three denied.
Three no-knack denials. That means we didn't get to see, hear the delicious no-knack success music.
Too bad.
I guess you guys are just going to have to bring it for our next no-knack special.
Excellent submissions, though.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
I did hear somebody who didn't beat the buzzer on submissions. They told me what they were submitting for a particular sci-fi TV show, and it sounded like a true contender. So maybe we can play that in substitution of a canon when we're back in action week to week in December. All right, everybody. That is our last episode.
Yep.
So next week, knock on wood, or at least the next episode, we'll be back in action with regular scheduled programming.
Yay! Thank you.